Richard Amsel and his art, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
The magnitude of this pandemic and the speed with which it has swept through the world have inspired some people to say, this must be how it felt at the beginning of the AIDS crisis. But that isn't true. Let's take a look back.
Lack of equality for some is lack of equality for all. And I think it's time for us all to get equal. Stay to the side.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Singapore's High Court rejects gross indecency challenges, remembering an illustrator and a demonstrator, and is COVID the AIDS of a new generation? Those stories and more this week as we begin our 33rd year together discovering This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 4th, 2020. COVID-19 continues to engulf the world, and we'll have LGBTQ-related updates on the pandemic later in this newscast. Meanwhile, other major events made queer news this week. Singapore's High Court rejected calls to overturn the city-state's colonial-era statute that outlaws gross indecency between men. A challenge to the ruling has already been filed in the Court of Appeal on behalf of well-known disc jockey Johnson Ong Ming and veteran LGBTQ rights activist, retired Dr. Roy Tan. That's according to their respective lawyers quoted in the Straits Times on March 31st. Lawyers for plaintiff activist Brian Chung in the third separate legal challenge to Penal Code Section 377A said that they'd be filing their challenge soon. In his 105-page ruling, High Court Justice C pointed to a Court of Appeal decision in 2014 upholding the statute and said that he saw no cogent reasons to depart from binding decisions of the highest court in the land.
LGBTQ groups, of course, condemned the Singapore High Court ruling. A statement issued by Ready for Repeal, which gathered more than 44,000 signatures on a 2018 petition advocating repeal, called it a bitter blow to LGBTQ Singaporeans who yearn to be treated as equals in their country. Organizers of the massive annual Pink Dot Rally in the Park for LGBTQ rights said the ruling effectively upholds, entrenches, and continues the discrimination of a minority group. Pink Dot was among the hundreds, perhaps thousands, of Pride-related events that have been canceled or postponed around the world because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Pink Dot will become a virtual Shine a Pink Light from Your Home event on June 27th, a literally worldwide virtual LGBTQ Pride celebration on that day is also in the works.
Government bans on LGBTQ Pride events in the Turkish capital of Ankara have been ruled unlawful. A March 23rd decision by the Second Administrative Court reaffirmed its April 2019 ruling on the illegality of the ban. Ankara's government had still banned a planned Pride event after that ruling, which forced the LGBTI associations of Ankara back into court. Once again, it was found that the government failed to provide any concrete evidence to justify the ban. Activists said that they hope Ankara officials will finally relent.
The U.S. state of Idaho's Republican Governor Brad Little has signed two bills that target the rights of transgender people. One denies trans people the ability to change their gender on their state birth certificates. The other bans trans schoolgirls from participating as girls in school athletics. Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights told the Washington Blade that he expects queer legal advocacy groups to file lawsuits challenging both anti-trans laws. Governor Little signed both bills into law on March 30th, the day before the Transgender Day of Visibility. Alex Schmider of the LGBTQ media watchdog group GLAAD slammed Little's ill-timed action. Schmider said, "While the United States is overwhelmed with a massive public health crisis, Little passed legislation targeting some of the most vulnerable members of the LGBTQ community, transgender children."
A global pandemic is apparently no reason to put a pause on hate. A report issued by the highly respected Southern Poverty Law Center warns of a huge spike in the number of anti-queer groups across the United States during the past year. the center tracks far-right extremism around the country on many fronts. This week's report says that the number of anti-LGBTQ groups that they've monitored in the last 12 months has mushroomed from 49 to 70. The report lays at least part of the blame on Donald Trump. It claims that a number of high-profile Trump appointees have links to homophobic groups and charges that staffers from organizations that vilify the LGBTQ community have been hired by the Trump administration and have influenced and written its policies. Contrary to candidate Trump's promise,
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
His administration has filed a number of briefs in federal anti-discrimination cases, generally supporting religious-based bias against LGBTQ people. The White House trotted out a gay Trump apologist to dismiss the Southern Poverty Law Center report. Deputy Press Secretary Judd Deere accused what he called the radical left, and without specifics, dubbed the report a far-left smear.
The COVID-19 crisis and mounting political pressure has prompted a relaxation of the rules on blood donations from gay and bisexual men by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The FDA yielded to the call from more than a dozen senators and the LGBTQ advocacy group GLAAD. Regulations established in 2015 banned male blood donors who had had sex with another man during the previous 12 months. Now it's cut to 3 months. That falls short of scientifically based evidence supporting a complete removal of the ban. Lesbian Senator from Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin, led the lawmakers' approach to the FDA and lamented that it shouldn't have taken a pandemic and the resulting urgent blood shortage. A GLAAD statement applauded the policy change, but promised to keep pushing for the ban to be lifted entirely. Sexually active gay and bisexual men in the UK and Australia are also banned from donating blood. Veteran Aussie activist Rodney Croom pointed to warnings by experts of a looming blood shortage down under because of the pandemic. Croom pointed out that the risk of passing on diseases like HIV through blood donation is created by unsafe sex, not gay sex. We can't allow old prejudices to get in the way of saving lives.
Among a number of prominent deaths in the LGBTQ community from COVID-19 this week, 60-year-old New Jersey emergency room doctor Frank Gabrin died in his husband's arms only a few days after displaying symptoms. In addition to praising his husband as a person who just wanted to help people, Arnold Vargas urged everyone to demand adequate personal protective equipment for healthcare providers.
Progressives in New York City and beyond are mourning the COVID-19 death of Mexican immigrant and transgender activist Lorena Borjas. New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said she was heartbroken by the news. Trans ACLU attorney Chase Strangio praised Borjas for saving more people than almost anyone I have ever known.
Another casualty of COVID-19 this week was top South African scientist Gita Ramji, who dedicated her life to fighting and preventing HIV/AIDS. The 64-year-old was well known for her work expanding access to HIV treatment to disadvantaged women. UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima described Ramji's death as a huge loss at a time when the world needs her most.
The British man, credited with founding Manchester's world-famous gay village, is also among the dead this week. His brother announced that Glenn Stevens died in the hospital after showing symptoms of COVID-19 before suffering a fatal stroke.
On the brighter side, a British medical fetish store called MedFet has donated its entire stock of hospital scrubs to the National Health Service. Producers of gay creator Ryan Murphy's acclaimed TV series Pose have donated everything usable from their hospital set, including genuine medical supplies to area hospitals. Pose is set in New York City during the AIDS pandemic. Murphy also personally donated $50,000 to a fund created to assist people in the creative arts who've lost their jobs because of the virus.
Finally, prejudice and protest, not a pandemic shutdown, forced the closure of the last remaining Chick-fil-A fast food outlet in the UK. Pink News reports that the notoriously anti-queer restaurant franchise established in the Oracle Shopping Center in Reading closed its doors after Oracle Management decided not to renew its six-month pilot period lease. Despite a PR effort to the contrary, Chick-fil-A's reigning rooster Dan Cathy recently wrote a letter to the far-right American Family Association reaffirming that the Atlanta, Georgia-based company continues to fund anti-LGBTQ groups and causes. Very visible and vocal protests by LGBTQ activists and their supporters at each location have now made the UK Chick-fil-A less. Martin Cooper of Reading Pride told Berkshire Live that it was not about the conservative religious beliefs of the company's management. Cooper said, "It was about their reported actions. That's where we drew the line and decided to act." Chick-fil-A's only other UK outlet was located inside McDonnell Aviemore Resort in the Scottish Highlands. It shuttered its doors in January.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending April 4th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is usually recorded in the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, but we're recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. The news is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
At the time, people didn't understand how it could be passed from one person to another. Touching, kissing, sex, was it in the air or the water? Could you get it just by being in the same room with someone who had it?
How do the early days of COVID compare with the early days of AIDS? Some thoughts on that question later in the program. But first, the Rainbow Minute crew illustrate the story of a famed illustrator.
Richard Amsel and his art, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Ask most 10-year-olds what they want to be when they grow up, and they won't have a clue. But Richard Amsel had no doubt. Walking out of a theater with his sister, he said he was going to be a movie poster illustrator. Eventually, Amsel illustrated movie posters for Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Sting, and dozens of other hit movies. As one of the top poster artists of the late 20th century, his posters were often more memorable than the movies themselves. With an innate gift for capturing a persona, he also created 37 illustrations of celebrities for TV guide covers in the 70s and 80s, which placed his work on 20 million coffee tables across America. As one of the most important poster artists of the late 20th century, Richard Amsel's celebrity portraits have achieved iconic status. Unfortunately, Amsel died at age 37 from AIDS complications in 1985. But many illustrators have filled his shoes by emulating his style. As a former student at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, it is fitting the Richard Amsel illustration collection be reposited at his alma mater for further examination by students and scholars. The collection includes over 500 pieces, including Bette Midler album covers and TV guide covers with celebrity portraits. His works were cataloged by university classmate Gary Brailow. Close friend Dorian Hannaway donated Amsel's works to the university in 2009 and painstakingly supervised Amsel's inaugural display in the Rosenwald Wolf Gallery, thereby securing Amsel's legacy for posterity. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Noah Scalin.
Activism is change. It is the fuel, lubricant, and engine that drives the slowly moving turtle mobile that is progress.
He was just a kid who didn't want to pledge allegiance to the flag. His story is coming up later after another youthful reflection.
Other countries are moving much more swiftly than we are. Other countries' response to AIDS demonstrates a sense of emergency which has been lacking here in the United States.
The late queer AIDS activist and musician Michael Callan.
I too have witnessed the desperate scramble for treatments, any treatment, and have seen friends fly around the world in search of a cure, frustrated by the sluggish treatment research response here in the United States.
We are living. We are living in wartime.
we condemned to repeat the history of AIDS in this age of coronavirus? Our outcasting overtime friends were not around back in the day, but they can see how the current pandemic is a different matter.
This is Outcasting Overtime, from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Chris, an Outcasting youth participant. In a remarkably short period of time, the coronavirus outbreak, COVID-19, has become a world pandemic. Many people are panicking, but already, just a few months in, we already know a lot about the new coronavirus, how it can spread from one person to another, and what steps we have to take to contain it, even if those things are difficult and isolating and not everyone is doing them, but we're trying. The situation changes by the hour, but as of the time we're recording this piece, the Trump administration's response to COVID has been neither effective nor timely. But there isn't a total vacuum. Governors, particularly in the hardest hit states, are leading the way. And you can't get away from coronavirus on the news. The virus can affect everybody, and everybody is talking about it. The magnitude of this pandemic and the speed with which it has swept through the world have inspired some people to say, this must be how it felt at the beginning of the AIDS crisis. But that isn't true. Let's take a look back. In the US, the first article about the new illness in the mainstream press was a short article on an inside page of the New York Times on July 3, 1981. The headline read, "Rare cancer seen in 41 homosexuals." Over the next few years, the number of patients grew quickly. The disease was originally called GRID, for gay-related immune deficiency. Initially, there was no evidence that it was contagious, but that quickly changed. The disease started to be noticed in other populations, including hemophiliacs, Haitians, and intravenous drug users, and calling it gay-related didn't accurately describe it anymore, so the name was changed to AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. At the time, people didn't understand how it could be passed from one person to another. Touching, kissing, sex, was it in the air or the water? Could you get it just by being in the same room with someone who had it? The search for an answer was complicated greatly by a major difference between COVID and AIDS, the incubation period, or how long it takes between when someone is exposed to the virus and when they get sick. With COVID, we currently understand the incubation period to be around 2 weeks. That means that a method of stopping transmission can be tried, and within just 2 weeks, we know whether it worked. So we figured out very quickly that the coronavirus can easily spread from person to person through the air and through surfaces that infected people have touched. And we figured out what we have to do to keep it from spreading even more. Social distancing, staying at home and away from other people, washing our hands frequently, and avoiding touching our faces. AIDS was much different. In the beginning, no one knew what caused it, but eventually a virus was discovered. Originally called HTLV-3, and then HIV, for human immunodeficiency virus. Then we had to figure out how it was transmitted. But this was greatly complicated by the fact that the incubation period could be 5 to 10 years. With cause and effect separated by so many years, it was difficult. Eventually, it was discovered that HIV could be spread by exchanging bodily fluids. This could happen not only through sex, straight sex as well as gay, but also when intravenous drug users shared needles, and through medically necessary blood transfusions and other pathways. A blood test was developed. Gay men, regardless of whether they were infected, were banned from donating blood. Safer sex became a much greater priority, not just for gay men, but for everyone. The social and political backdrop against which all of this was happening was also very different. We very quickly come to understand that virtually anyone could get COVID, but in the beginning, AIDS was thought of as a gay disease, and gay men in particular were a despised minority. Many people thought that the people getting sick were getting what they deserved. When the virus started spreading, it was gay men who were vilified for bringing it into the mainstream. There had always been animosity towards gay people, and the AIDS crisis gave mainstream society a brand new reason to hate us. Because of this, AIDS was generally not a topic of everyday conversation outside the gay community. Infamously, President Ronald Reagan didn't publicly say the word AIDS until 6 years into the epidemic, and his administration's negligence caused funding for research and care to be held up. A lot of people didn't care about the gays and what they were doing to each other. The Catholic Church, which was opposed to birth control, also opposed the use of condoms to reduce the spread of AIDS. The epidemic was allowed to spiral out of control, while the rest of America either ignored it or tried to undermine prevention efforts. Inside the gay community, there were some who were unaffected, but for many people, it was nearly all anyone could talk about. Over time, the community banded together. Activist groups were formed to pressure the government to release the necessary funding. It wasn't easy, and lots of different tactics had to be tried. But somehow, people in the community found ways to take care of each other. Lesbians, who were at the lowest risk of infection, played heroic roles. We did an outcasting series on that a couple of years ago. You can find it on our website, outcastingmedia.org. Some people, out of necessity, came to know more about the virus than doctors did. And eventually, once the virus was understood in a broader context, particularly the context that it could be spread through heterosexual sex, America woke up. Funding was released, research was sped up, care for sick patients improved. And in the mid-90s, 15 years after the beginning of the outbreak, effective treatments were developed. People with AIDS suddenly had a future. But all of this happened much too slowly because of deep animosity towards gay people. According to UNAIDS, the number of people infected by HIV since the beginning of the epidemic is nearly 75 million. 32 million died. Imagine how much lower those numbers might have been if people hadn't hated gay men and had instead recognized AIDS as a worldwide health crisis right from the beginning. And imagine how you today, dealing with this new coronavirus, would be panicking if COVID were raging in your community but there was no effective public response. Imagine the sickness and death becoming pervasive among your own friends and family and asking, pleading, screaming for help, but no one listens, no one really cares about the infected, and the government sits on money that should be released for developing a vaccine or cure or for caring for those who are sick. Imagine the rage and grief you'd feel as your friends were getting sick and dying and the rest of the world was ignoring the whole thing. That's what it felt like at the beginning of AIDS. Obviously, this is a very brief description of what happened in the early days of AIDS, and we're glossing over a lot of details to present the big picture. In upcoming outcasting coverage, we'll take a more detailed look. Right now, of course, it's far too early to know how the COVID pandemic will affect the world. We know that merely being in close proximity with someone who is infected can cause you to get it. We know that it's much more serious than the seasonal flu. It's shameful that President Trump is dragging his feet, casting blame on China, disclaiming all responsibility, and passing the buck to the states, when a unified and comprehensive federal response is required. But at least let's be thankful that unlike what happened in the early years of the AIDS crisis, widespread prejudice and hatred towards a despised minority aren't causing the COVID pandemic to be ignored. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, based in New York. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. I'm Chris. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Some people sit on their butts. Got the dream, yeah, but not the guts. That's peachy for some people, for some humdrum people to be.
Years ago, an Arkansas fifth grader moved headlines and hearts in the U.S. with his determination not to pledge allegiance to the flag until there was equality for LGBTQ people. GLAAD awarded a CNN report on Will Phillips' courageous stand at their March 13, 2010 gala. CNN sent Will to accept the award himself.
This is a huge honor. First of all, I would like to thank David Coot of the Arkansas Times, CNN, and especially my family for letting me speak and for letting me be heard. I did this because I wanted to exercise my inherent rights as a citizen. I wanted people to widen their minds and look outside their tiny mind boxes to see that even 10-year-olds can have logical opinions and to accept that I am an intelligent person like most people. Activism is important. Activism is change. It is the fuel, lubricant, and engine that drives the slowly moving turtle mobile that is progress. I accept this award on behalf of those who have been struck down, beaten up, and instead of attention and praise, have gotten only intolerance, violence, or even worse, indifference. thank you again, and to quote a great modern-day thinker, live long and prosper.
Years later, young Will Phillips ended his Pledge of Allegiance boycott in response to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act. As Grand Marshal of the Northwest Arkansas Pride Parade, Will broke his saluting the flag fast on June 29, 2013. We're curious to know what happened to Will Phillips since then, so if you know, give us a heads up.
So much
nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
newsroom transcripts,
and CDs and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
Nightclubs may not be considered essential in a pandemic lockdown, but lockdown people know that entertainment is an absolute necessity and that even drag queens have to eat. That's why one screaming queen in Australia is now a streaming queen.
I am an international flight attendant. I am a Sydney-based drag megastar. I arrived back in Australia to find out that my airline was grounded. I found out every single club I worked at was closed.
Ladies and gents, straights and bends, direct from isolation in the one-bedroom apartment close to Sydney International Airport, welcome that lovable, single, solo drag queen, the amazing Penny Trayson.
Our William Broom chats with Daniel Penny Trayson Foote next time on This Way Out. In the meantime, we'll be following Penny's lead and taking some advice from Randy Rainbow.
We will crush the curve. We will turn the tide. But for now, just suck it up and stay the fuck inside. I'm so bored.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and Tanya Kane Perry, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Noah Scalin, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Outcaster Chris, produced by Mark Sophos, and from William Broom. Brett McCullough, Michael Callen, Chris Colfer, and Randy Rainbow performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, David Hunt, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, KOOP, Austin, Texas, WGDR, Plainfield, and Hardwick, Vermont, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay home, y'all, and stay tuned.